Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League, the Champions League and the Europa League. I'm Robbie Earle, and as for Robbie Musto, we sent him off a vacation. So today I'm joined by legendary commentator Andros Cantor. Andros and I will be calling the Manchester United Aston Villa game this Saturday, 7:30 Eastern Time on Peacock. So no better time to have Telemundo's lead commentator join us to discuss not only the Premier League, for his roots in broadcasting, the most memorable moments from his broadcasting career, his thoughts on Lionel Messi and his home country Argentina and their chances in next year's World Cup. That's what we've got coming up on today's episode with Andros Cantor. Andros, I'd have to say it's an absolute pleasure to invite you onto the Two Robbies podcast. You sit there, football royalty, I would say, in many ways. It's great to have you. It's great to maybe talk a little bit about career, your thoughts on the game, your thoughts on Argentinian football. But have you seen football, the return of football and the fans back in the stadium? It must warm your heart to see those scenes again.
Well, Rory, thank you so much for your accolades and thank you for having me on your podcast. It's definitely great to see fans back in the stadiums in the Premier League. I mean, we got used to calling games with nobody and empty stadiums. And I always take something positive out of that is that we could listen to everything that players and coaches said, or most everything. And now, obviously, with the deafening sounds of the crowds, we can't anymore. But it is definitely so welcoming to see fans back in the stadiums, not only because of the atmosphere they bring, obviously, but because it kind of says that we're almost over the hump of this, you know, long, almost 2 years of the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the scenes we've seen, I think the connection back between football and the fans is so, so important. And as you say, certainly in the Premier League, we've seen that in the first 5 weeks. We're currently celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month as we record this episode. So, Andros, you're no better example of someone who's a proud Hispanic heritage, born and raised in Argentina. Just tell us what that means to you and your roots growing up there.
Well, you know, I feel very much Argentinian, even though I lived in the U.S. Now for more than 44 years, and I lived in Argentina until I was 15 only, and I moved to this country. Mm-hmm. But obviously, my parents being from Argentina, I have family, friends, and obviously a huge emotional and sentimental link to Argentina. And it's great to be able to say that, you know, I'm a Hispanic American, that, you know, I love the U.S. as much as I love Argentina. And obviously, Argentina is in my blood, will always be. And when it comes to World Cups, believe me, I, like probably everybody else, goes really crazy and about its national team. And you know, Argentina will always be my team. I coined the phrase way back in 1994 for the U.S. national team. I called it La Selección de Todos, which translates into everyone's national team, because I thought, Robbie, that besides the national team of our country of origin, everyone else should be rooting for the U.S. national team, because what this country has given us all that, you know, live here. So, you know, I'm obviously a very proud Argentinian. My Argentinian accent in Spanish, they tell me, has diluted a little bit, but still, you know, working in Spanish television, you have to be neutral in the words you choose, because obviously every country, even though we speak the same language, speaks differently. But definitely, I mean, very proud to be celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, saying that I'm a very proud Argentinian American.
It's interesting in your, the roots of obviously starting in Argentina, and I'm interested in how, as a young boy growing up, all I really wanted to do was be a footballer. And at 5, 6, 7 years of age, I'm out there playing with my friends and getting in the street, and eventually got picked up by a club and went on to have a reasonable career in a professional game. But how do you get started as a broadcaster? How and when did you first realise you wanted to be a play-by-play commentator? And how did you kind of get into that world from a young child to where you sit today, one of the biggest names in broadcasting?
It's funny because obviously we had the same ambition. I mean, we went through exactly the same childhood. I wanted to be a player. The difference is that you got picked up by a club and I didn't. And I went to a tryout. I believe I was 10 or 11. They put me on the field. There were hundreds of kids trying out that day. They put me on the field, I believe, for 11 minutes. They put me at left back. I didn't choose where to play. They put me at left back. I'm very right-footed. And not because I was that bad that they took me out 11 minutes after the fact, but it was because there were so many kids trying out and there was not enough time. So I didn't get picked up. I played, once I moved here, I played my last year in high school. The joke goes around that after college, I went to USC, the University of Southern California, yeah. LA. The joke that I always throw around is that the MLS didn't exist and I didn't have anywhere else to go, which is not true. So anyways, I played as much as I could. And I always say, Robbie, that journalists, sports journalists at least, we are all frustrated athletes in whatever, sport we cover. In my case, I would have died to play a minute with my team in Argentina, Boca Juniors, or with any professional team. And it's funny because I studied print journalism at USC. I liked writing, and I began writing. I began my career writing about soccer not that often. I was the correspondent for a big editorial conglomerate in Argentina that published several magazines. So they sent me to cover the Oscars, boxing matches in Vegas. I covered Ali. I covered Sugar Ray Leonard. I covered the biggest fights there were. I wrote about politics, economics, nothing that I knew too much about, but I wrote anyways. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't that much soccer in Southern California. And I was about to go back home to Argentina because, my life is soccer, football. And I was lucky enough to get a call for an audition by Univision way back then. They told me, bring two suits, two shirts, and two ties. Okay. So they put me to do color commentary on the first match. We take a break. We go to lunch. The person that ended up being my boss says, I can tell you know a lot about the game, but, after the comma, after the but, I was waiting for him to say, thank you very much, go back home. And he says, do you think you can do play-by-play? We're looking for a play-by-play man. Do you think you can do play-by-play the next game? This is February of 1987. And, I was 23. What I was going to tell him? No. I have the music of listening and growing up listening to the radio because I don't know how it was in England, but in Argentina, we went to the stadium with the little transistor radio glued to our ears. Really, I had, the rhythm, but I had never done it before. As a matter of fact, I had never stepped inside a television studio in my life. And then I called that second game. And I guess he liked the way I called it and called me. he called me like a week or 10 days later to offer me a full-time job. So that's how my play-by-play career got started.
So as a youngster, I remember watching many World Cups and the likes of Maradona, probably Cruyff, Platini, Moratti, the Brian Robson of England. And those were the players I watched. Those were the players that took me to another level and gave me dreams and ambitions. What were the players who influenced you through your sort of early love of football and then maybe into your broadcasting career?
Well, through the broadcasting career, I have to make a differentiation that I have Maradona way up here. I mean, Maradona to me is God.
Yeah.
Football God. I haven't seen nobody better than him. Not even Messi, not even Cristiano. They're great, absolute great players. But the GOAT to me is Maradona. You have to understand, I mean, you understand better than anyone that Diego played in an era where football was totally different than it is today. Today, you put a hand on Cristiano, he stops running. you put the shirt on Messi, they call a foul immediately. Diego withstood the most vicious tackles, fouls, etc. throughout his career. He made Napoli, you know, he put Napoli basically in the Italian and European map. It would be unfair to say single-handedly. He did have some good players, but I mean that was a very modest team that you know he put on the map by winning the Scudettos and the UEFA League. And for the national team, he won the World Cup.
Yeah. And
in Argentina, there is it's sometimes I really think it's unfair, but the make or break thing that we go by is the World Cup. And
Diego
won the World Cup. And Messi just now won his first title with the Argentinian national team shirt. So, you know, he, even though he didn't influence my career, I mean, I covered him. I was there with him. I knew him personally. Mm-hmm. I was there with him when he won the two Italian leagues. I was there with him in Mexico, very close to him during the Mexico World Cup. So he is definitely the one that obviously had a big influence in my career because I was lucky enough to enjoy him in his prime. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, growing up, obviously I caught the last of Johan Cruyff. Johan Cruyff, I have a picture that is in my book, which is totally crazy. I was in my last year in high school in San Marino, California, which is right below Pasadena, where the Aztecs played. And I'm jogging along. I'm, you know, 17, jogging along. And I see Johan with his two dogs, walking his two dogs. I say, wait, that's Johan Cruyff. So I went to see him play. Obviously, you know, at the Rose Bowl. I even went to San Diego for the final of the Aztecs way back then. And, you know, I enjoyed him. I remember the, you know, sneaking out of school in the 1974 final to watch Germany against Holland. And then there were, you know, all the great players, like you say, Platini. I mean, I enjoyed, I enjoy good players, whether they were superstars or not. I mean, I really do that.
Yeah, it's privilege that you know and have seen such great players from the past. I just want to move forward in terms of as a player and some of those great players. We, you know, we have the Cruyff turn, and we've seen how Maradona could just eliminate defenders on a dribble with his speed and his power, and Ronaldo's today more the goal celebrations and the athletic leaps he does. So players generally from the past and in modern days have signature moves that are known to them. You have a signature call which is known to you, the goal celebration. Where did that come from? How did it start and what was the basis of bringing it to the world of football?
Well, I always say, Robbie, that I didn't invent anything really. That is the way most Latin American football announcers call the goals. They call it the same way as I do. There was obviously a breaking point in my career, which was the 1994 World Cup that was played here in the U.S. My work got a lot of attention, and we pretty much put Univision on the map, on the general market map, if you will, because even though ABC was broadcasting that World Cup, you know, we were getting the biggest ratings, and it was crazy to think that I've called 3 World Cups in television for Univision, and I was the only play-by-play announcer. So technically, I called 58 of the 64 matches in 3 World Cups in a row, because I couldn't call, obviously, the games that were played simultaneously in the last fixture of group play. So I was lucky enough to be, at the right time and in the right place at the right time, because of the attention my work was getting. And I don't do it, you know, as a gimmick. I don't do it. It just comes out naturally, because that's the way we feel for the game in Spanish. I know in English it's a little bit more subdued, so is the commentary, but you know, we go like, we give in ourselves a lot. We put too much emotion sometimes into a soccer match. It's like life and death for us, you know. It's like, especially when the national teams play. So that's the way.
Goals are special moments, aren't they? I mean, for all that, you know, you train, you work hard, sometimes one goal can decide a game. And I think it should be celebrated in many respects. It should be something that people, you know, it's not a lot of the American sports where a score can be 95, 94. I mean, one or two goals often is going to decide the game. So I think that it's fitting that you do that. I just wondered, in terms of, at times it's almost like a theatrical act, and you're projecting that voice like a baritone or a tenor. Do you have to take care of the voice? Do you have to do any voice exercise, anything to make sure you can still deliver?
Not really. I mean, I have my exercises. Usually during the World Cup, I do take care of the voice by some voice exercises that my voice coach that I talk to only once every 4 years, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I get to call, first of all, you know, I try to leave my emotions. It's very, very hard, because obviously when you have your emotions running high, it tends to, you know, to get your voice more tired. It's not very easy to leave your emotions out of a World Cup game, regardless whether it's Argentina, the U.S. or whoever. I mean, this is the World Cup. For us as broadcasters, it's exactly the same as for you players. I'm broadcasting the World Cup. So it's like a big, big game, regardless if it's, whatever, Nigeria against Sweden in a Spanish TV network. That is a huge game. And I will, you know, I have to be clever in the way I use my voice if I have a second game that day, or if I have a doubleheader the next day. But no, I don't take care of my voice during the year, because luckily, and you know, I knock on wood, I haven't needed to. But obviously, I am very conscious. You know, sometimes I have it, sometimes I don't have a strong voice to call a game. There's so many factors, you know, the way I eat the night before, the way I sleep the night before, that is crucial to having a robust voice. But it's not only the goal call. You know, the goal call is a combination, like you say, of the play. It's just keeping people on the edge of their seats with my enthusiasm and the build-ups to the goal, and just being energetic throughout the game is what really wears me out usually on a game day.
So in some ways, it's a bit like playing. The preparation's important. You sleep, the rest, the training, the getting yourself ready, and then making sure you you're on form when it's showtime in the big day. I want to move you to, take you back to 1998. There was a certain Caribbean team that made it to the World Cup for the first time, the Reggae Boys. I have to say, I have great memories thinking back at the time through the qualifications, the CONCACAF route. That was obviously a lot of games, quite difficult. We got there, and I remember the famous game in Paris against Argentina, 1998. I believe you were around, may even have called that game for one of the networks.
I was, and I am pretty sure I have, because as I told you, I've called every game. Your match against Croatia was the first one, right?
Yeah, first one, yeah.
So I am 100% positive that I've called your goal. And I covered, obviously, I was at the stadium for the Argentina-Jamaica game. Yes, I was. Yeah. This is, incredible that, now we're going to be doing a game together.
We're looking together. You were commentating.
I will have to check the air checks and see what I said about you.
I hope it wasn't anything too bad.
I mean, you have their own. Yeah. Pretty much covered on one player, remember, I think.
Oh, yeah. So I go back to those days. And, it was a Argentina team stacked with talent. Varane, the Ortegas, the Batistuta got a hat-trick up front. I was pretty much detailed to try and close down, get on and close down Varane, stop his passing, because he was basically running the game like a quarterback, getting it from midfield. And it was interesting. A couple of things stood out to me when I played against him. One was, there's levels in football and soccer that, there's good players, you can get to some, and then there's some that go above it. And he was, maybe not seen as a world star, but I think people who knew the game realised what a talent he was. I don't think English football saw the best of him when he came to Manchester United at first, and probably found it hard to kind of create the right personality that he had in Argentina, went to Chelsea. But players who played with him, some of the players who trained with him, remember Dwight York at Manchester United saying he's an absolute genius on the ball. Right foot, left foot. I remember I tried to close him down on his right foot one time. He shifted the ball and hit a 20-yarder. So I thought, okay, strong on his right. I'll cut that off the next time. I shut him down on his right foot. He did exactly the same with his left foot. It was just he disarmed me with his ability. And I think these players like that, obviously the Messis, the Ronaldos, it's obvious, but there is a level of players like that who are just, whatever they do, you cannot really stop them.
Yeah, no. La Brujita, we call him the witch, because his dad was called the witch, and he is called the little witch. He was so talented. I mean, Verón was so talented. Unfortunately, he had a bad rap. I don't know if you know this story. He had a bad rap in Argentina, because since he played in England, and we, we lost to England in Sapporo. Mm-hmm. This is funny how, many years later we can say that.
Yeah.
The guy that made the foul for the penalty was Mauricio Pochettino.
Tottenham,
And, he really had a bad rap in Argentina, because they claimed that he didn't play all out against England because he was, playing in England, and they didn't want to, hurt his pocket, I guess. But anyways, he was extremely talented. Out of that group, there is one player that stands out to me, which is, one of the world's superstars. Strikers, anyway. I mean, one of the top strikers in the world, which was Batistuta.
Yeah.
Batistuta was unstoppable. Yeah. Right there with Marco van Basten, around his era. I mean, he was a terrific, terrific forward. So, yeah, Argentina had really good players in that World Cup.
I remember walking past Batistuta. He was in the tunnel. And the thing that struck me was what a beast of a man he was. His legs were pumped, his shoulders, he was square, he looked down, and whether he played the part and he did that well and got a hat-trick on the day, but just his physicality and his build and his presence was wonderful and did make him a great player. I believe now he has a farm somewhere out in the rural parts of Argentina. He keeps very much away from the game.
He was a pundit for a while. in Argentina. I guess he didn't like it that much. And I read recently that he does want to get into the game either as coach or as coach. But, yeah, he's I think he has a farm. He doesn't live in Buenos Aires, in the capital city. Mm-hmm. He's from Reconquista. So I think he has a big farm there, yes.
Stays away. Just before we move on to a little bit more current in the Premier League and the, obviously the game we're going to call at the weekend, just on Lionel Messi, as you talked about, he won his first major trophy with Argentina, the Copa America. How do you summarise his sort of career with Argentina? So you talked about Maradona being the GOAT, but where does Messi fit? And do Argentina have a chance of winning the next World Cup? Maybe a little bit less pressure on him and they've got that trophy already?
I'm going to break it down this way. First, I'm going to answer like a coach. First, we have to qualify, which they're good on their way to doing so. Before Copa America, I would tell you that I didn't think... I mean, Argentina, for me, always has a chance to win the World Cup because, I mean, I don't know if there's... I'm pretty sure there is, but... The Argentinian players that put on the, I mean, they died to play on the national team. They died to play, you know, with the Argentinian jersey on. I'm not sure every player in the world is worth, wants to sacrifice so much. You have to understand that to play a World Cup qualifier, they have to fly, you know, now they fly in private jets, but in another time they flew, you know, 20 hours with two stops to get to Argentina on a Tuesday, play on a Wednesday, get back to their teams on the weekend, they would, you know, do whatever it took to put on that Argentinian shirt. And that sense of belonging that the Argentine players have for the national team is unparalleled to none. Having said this, you know, we lost three finals in a row, the 2014 World Cup final, and then the two Copa America finals to Chile. Yeah. And that was like a very heavy load to carry. I mean, we made it to the final again in Copa America in the summer in Maracanã Stadium against Brazil. You know, our rivalry with Brazil is like probably the biggest rivalry in the world. And the fact that they won it, I think, took off so much weight off the shoulder of Messi because there are not really that many players that played in the other finals in this current team. So now Messi, I feel he's liberated from the pressure of winning something. And the team is really playing much, much better. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm starting to like the chances that we might have in the World Cup after all, because they're really playing as a team. They're not Messi dependent per se. They're not. When you know, before the other teams were like, "Oh, let's give it to Messi and see what he comes up with." Now they play more as a team and have Messi. So I like their chances much, much better now.
Yeah, be fitting for him to win a World Cup as he comes towards the end of his career. Can't talk about Messi without talking about his mate Ronaldo. We're going to be commentating on the game 7:30 a.m. Eastern time on Peacock. Ronaldo's back at Manchester United. One, how surprised were you that the move happened? Two, how surprised are you in this start that he's made?
I don't know if I was surprised because players like that, it's like Guardiola said, players like that are the ones that choose where to play. Messi and Cristiano, you know, they're so big that they choose where they want to play. You know, there weren't too many teams that could afford him. That's the reality. And obviously, there is also an emotional link of him going back to where he started his big career in England and in Europe after Sporting. But I am amazed at his work rate. I mean, nothing new really. I know he's 36, but he doesn't look it. He hasn't. I don't think he might have slowed down a little bit, but it doesn't show. It doesn't. He doesn't look slower to me.
No,
because now he moves Before he used to run, you know, the 70 yards, 70 meter sprints, recovering the ball back in his own turf and then going, you know, all the way to the other side. Now he's more focused on, you know, just a parcel of land with less space. So, you know, his explosiveness is there, as we could see by the his second goal at Old Trafford. Not the rebound one, but the one, you know, the through ball to him. He left the defender just, and he's great in the air. He's a beast. I mean, honestly, it's such a pleasure to see him play. And I think fans that are listening, you know, they have the tendency to compare Cristiano, Messi, this and that. I think fans should enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
You get to see them both.
Just enjoy the both of them while they're going. And it's as I watched him last week, I think it was a goal against West Ham. It's a testament to the quality of the level of fitness of his body and the level of fitness in his mind, because he thinks quicker than anybody else. He was the only person moving in the box when he's made the move and then the ball rebounds off the keeper. His speed of thought is increasing as he's getting older, because maybe the legs are not quite as dynamic as they were, but you add that, his ability, his drive that he's given to Manchester United, certainly makes him contender, certainly makes for a good game that we've got coming up against Villa on Saturday. Villa have got a couple of Argentinians in their ranks, just one of them, Emi Martinez, Emi Buendia. Buendia was somebody I really liked to acknowledge. I think it's good business for Aston Villa. And Martinez was, I always felt, the best goalkeeper at Arsenal, that Arsenal let go instead of Bert Leno.
I agree. I mean, this is the typical case, and you know it better than anybody, where, you know, sometimes players don't get their chances, and the coaches or goalkeeper coaches in this case don't realize what a gem they have. Martinez had last year at Aston Villa was outstanding. I don't know if he was the best keeper in the league. And yet, you know, he was outstanding every time he played the cups for Arsenal. And it's, you know, a tribute to his resilience for just hanging around. He was, I think he changed clubs, what, 7-8 different times, even though Arsenal had his transfer. He played in Spain, went back to England, went back to Spain. And now, obviously, you know, he is the, I wouldn't say the commanding figure of the Aston Villa team, but obviously a guarantee that you know, they're in good hands with him. Yeah. He's a great keeper, and the fact that he was instrumental as well in Argentina's quest to win the Copa America, that, you know, brought him obviously to the next level as well. So and Emiliano Buendia, I can't tell you much about him. I haven't seen him play that much. We will see now if he plays on Saturday against...
against Manchester United. Very clever, good technical, finds good spaces between the lines, was excellent for Norwich, did well in the Championship. And I thought it was good business. There was talk that Arsenal were after him in the summer, and Aston Villa actually went and did their business early. I think Villa knew they were losing Jack Grealish, knew they were getting the money in, and have made a really good signing. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing him. A couple more just before I let you go. Marcelo Bielsa's kind of taking the Premier League by storm with his personality, with his team, with the way he plays. He's a guy who signs one-year contracts, doesn't tie himself down too long, has a defined way of playing with his team that I think the Premier League have enjoyed, that the Premier League have embraced. They've almost become a lot of people's second team. That's the appeal of the man in the football club. Tell us what you know about Bielsa. And there is a bit of talk, people suggesting that maybe he needs to change or tweak his defensive setup. And there's others who say, listen, this is Bielsa, this is how he goes. Maybe stubborn's not the right word, but he has a very defined way of playing, and that's the way he's going to do it.
He even admitted that he's very stubborn, and he's not going to change now. Another chance. He's going to play the way he thinks he has to play. He really believes that his teams need to take risks, no matter who they play. it doesn't matter if they play Liverpool at Anfield or, you know, Burnley at home. I always say on my broadcast in Spanish that this Leeds under Bielsa can win, tie, or lose, but it will for surely entertain the audience. I like the way they're playing. They have a very thin group of players. I mean, you know, you get two defenders out and you have to improvise somebody in the back.
Midfield players,
I mean, Phillips played center back and then they had to put Shackleton, you know, in the cup because... I guess he's happy. This is the longest tenure that he's ever had at the club or national team level. He never coached for almost 3 years, the same team, 2.5 years. He's happy at Leeds, even though he, I believe he speaks English. I believe he understands.
Yeah, more. English. Yeah, I get the sense. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to tell you something, which is the audience should know. He is very, everything that comes out of his mouth in Spanish is very, very profound. It's not the typical, well, we are working, this and that. He articulates so well every single phrase that he gives out in Spanish that, first of all, it's a nightmare for his translator.
He's got a hardest job in football.
most definitely. But what I'm trying to say is that since he's so detailed on everything he says in Spanish, that even though he might be able to go to a restaurant and order, you know, dinner in English and talk to his players in the locker room in English, he doesn't feel comfortable going out to the press and speaking in English. But I'm pretty sure he understands, you know, most of it. So, yeah, it's tough that they haven't won a game yet. I hope they win their first Premier League game, you know, as soon as possible, just to get that out of the way and start, you know, their season. I thought they had a chance to Europe last year.
Yeah, I think we all did.
Doesn't
quite happen. Finally, just before we wrap up, I just wanted to get your thoughts around Raul Jimenez, who came into the Premier League with Wolves, finished 2 7th-place finishes, scoreless in his first 5 matches since he's come back now into the Premier League since that horrific head injury he had with David Luiz back in November, fractured skull. And I thought there was something quite interesting last week. Late on in the game, Traore goes down the wing for Wolves, puts in one of those lovely Traore crosses. And Jimenez, although the game was at 2-0, I think it was Watford that were down, but he has a chance to head to goal and the header goes wide of the post. And it was a real kind of very typical Jimenez opportunity in goal. And as he picked himself up, he ripped off his protective head sort of band that he's been wearing. And threw it to the ground. Now, I don't know if that was just frustration with missing the chance, maybe that his timing wasn't quite right, or in some respects that this sort of protective headband he's wearing, he's not feeling comfortable with. I just was interested in somebody who's known him and watched his career. Just wondered, you know, are we seeing maybe something that's psychological? Maybe there's a little bit of a mental effect of the kind of horrific injury that he faced on his head?
I'm pretty sure there is. I mean, I have to speak for myself. I cannot speak for him because I don't know what he's going through. But after such a traumatic injury, and this is not, you know, a ligament issue, a muscle injury, as the doctors told him, I mean, he is lucky to be alive, honestly. Mm-hmm. That was a very traumatic head. But if you can call it that, it took him a while to get back to training. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that what he did with his protective gear was a sense of frustration. First, that he didn't score the goal. Second, that, you know, was a clear reminder of what he had gone through, because I don't know if he would have headed it in without the protective gear or not. But I don't think he's 100% match fit yet. I think it's going to take him, you know, a few games more. I really think he's a terrific player, not only a goal scorer. I mean, look at the way he plays. He starts plays at midfield and finishes them on the other side. And even though, you know, the graphic says that he's scoreless through five Premier League matches, and so is Wolverhampton. You know, I think they scored two goals and one was
an own goal.
Yeah. So it's obviously, I know that he had scored under Nuno, I believe. I don't have the exact figure, but I believe it was like 40% of their goals.
Yeah.
So you would expect him now to be at that same rate. But the team, for some reason, is not, you know, getting the W's. So it's not strictly his fault. But I really hope that he gets back to match fitness, to 100% match fitness. I don't think he has that relationship with the ball that he used to have, where, you know, he was quick and could control the tempo of the game. Now I think he's still adjusting to the way he plays, and especially, I mean, it's very good. I love the fact that he wasn't afraid to head the ball.
Yeah.
Again, I speak for myself. With such a traumatic injury, I don't know if I would have played. I don't know if I would be brave enough to go, you know, up in the air on a 50-50 ball.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, you know, I feel you feel. I'm kind of wincing for him as he's jumping in the air, and we didn't have the injury. But I still think they're sorting things out. Bruno Lage, apparently, you know, their football's been good. I've seen a couple of the games. They've created good chances, haven't quite put them away. But I'm sure with Jimenez, he's one of those. He gets one, I think, then he starts flowing, and the rest are going to come. But listen, Andros, we're going to have to wrap it up there. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today, get an understanding of your broadcasting, your views on the games. I look forward to working with you on Saturday. We've got the Peacock match at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Manchester United host Aston Villa. And then after that, I'm going to have to put up with again my miserable Mr. Muster. We'll do our podcast on Sunday, that's September the 26th, and we'll look back at match week 6 with all the fascinating fixtures that are going to be played. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Cantor. I think this was an upgrade on the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, be healthy. It's a good night from him. It's a good night from him. Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.